If you've ever wondered how long it would take to see results if you switched from budgeting by month to budgeting by pay period, today's episode is for you. Christina is a mom of four, a pastor's wife, a nurse, and a runner. And today she's here to share her story of switching to budgeting by pay period in January and the amount of transformation she's seen not only in her finances, but also in her mindset about her money in just 3 short months. All right, Christina, thanks so much for coming on the Debt-Free Mom podcast. Could you give us a little bio of who you are, what you do, and why you wanted to come on today?
Absolutely. So my name is Christina. I am a nurse. I live in South Carolina. My husband is a pastor. We have 4 kids. They're 8, 6, 2.5, and 7 months. I work night shifts, so that's crazy. But that's just kind of a little bit about us. I wanted to come on today because I have tried everything. My husband and I have been married a little over 10 years. Obviously, we don't make a ton of money, but we make, I think, plenty of money, or should. And we've just been so frustrated these 10 years. It's been, you know, not on the same page with our finances. One of us managing it, the other one spending, and then the friction there. It's been starting out with student loan debt, feeling like you can't get out from underneath that, and then just piling on the things in life that happen and not really making wise decisions, just like, oh, we'll figure it out. It'll be okay. Oh, we'll figure it out. Tried, a million different budgeting techniques, and just nothing worked. Nothing worked. Mm-hmm. We kept taking on debt. We kept getting behind. And then we had this huge thing happened this year with our mortgage, and it was just kind of like, okay, we have to get this together. Like, there's no other option. We actually physically can't pay our bills if we don't get this under control. And so that's kind of what led me to the Debt-Free Mom, and pay period budgeting has like totally changed the game 100%. And, we're on the same page, and it's something that both of us make sense, and it's been huge. I mean, we may not have had like this radical, amazing change with our finances, but we've made so many strides towards goals in the last few months. And obviously, today we're making even bigger moves towards that. So it's been great.
Awesome. So what were some of the things you had tried in the past? Like, have you done apps on paper? What are some of the, you don't have to name anything, but what are some of the methods that you were really giving a concerted effort to?
The typical monthly budget. I put in what I thought our income should be. As a nurse, your income is not a set salary, but I knew about on average what my paycheck should be. And so I knew what my husband's would be. And I just put everything into a monthly budget. It's like, oh, yep, we should hopefully, if we stick to all of these budget numbers, we should be able to afford our bills. I think those were unrealistic numbers. We always went over in multiple categories and just kind of like, it is what it is. I tried like doing an Excel spreadsheet and it went horribly wrong. I just could not figure out the numbers. And the typical monthly budget thing just did not work well.
So what is the pay schedule that you're following? It sounds like it's probably not a once a month paycheck.
No, not at all. So my husband and I are paid opposite Fridays, and we were actually paid about the same amount. So for us, every week is a new pay period. And that's worked really well too, because I think in this situation, it makes us have a weekly conversation about our budget. And it's like that reset you talk about is like, okay, all right, we can put last week behind us and we can work forward.
Awesome. Yeah, it's such a big deal, especially when switching from once a month, where really, I mean, if you think about it, only getting the chance to reset your budget 12 times a year is just too small. Like, you have to go too long sticking to one set of numbers. So especially for a budget like weekly, there's a drastic difference between having a monthly budget and having a weekly budget. And it sounds small, when you talk to people who haven't tried it before, it sounds like a minor tweak, like, oh, who cares if I set it up every 2 weeks or, once a month. But I think what actually makes the difference is not necessarily the anything magical about the length of time, as much as it is that you give more frequent fresh starts and you're actually matching what's happening in your bank account. So you're actually following. Once this paycheck comes in, when we're making a monthly budget, we actually never ask the question, is the cash actually going to be available when the bills are due? Because we make a budget of all the income that I will receive by the end of the month, and then all the expenses that I will pay by the end of the month. And we think as long as the income number is a little bit higher than the expense number, then everything's fine. But we don't actually ask the question of when. Are my bills that come before my first paycheck going to be too big? And so mapping them out by pay period, and especially by week, can really narrow how much we have to look at. And so that we can just be like, okay, I can see across time, like you can set up those 6 to 8 weeks at one time. But when it comes to actually sticking to the budget and having a conversation with your husband, you only really have to narrow in on 1 week at a time, which just makes the hurdle so much smaller, I think. So in the past, before you started pay period budgeting, what were some of the goals that you had that you were trying to achieve that you felt like you weren't getting any traction on?
So we always knew the term of like an emergency fund. I know that the big push was always like, you only need $1,000 and then everything else goes towards debt. Well, in my mind, that just didn't feel safe enough. I have multiple children and things happen. And that to me was very frightening. So the goal was always like, okay, we'll have $10,000 in savings. And that was, you know, years ago since that's happened. Life happens, things happen. So that was always a goal. And it was like, we put money in savings and then we pull it right back out. We put money in savings, pull it right back out. And then honestly, just getting rid of some debt, you know, we were very much in the mindset, oh, if you have to put it on a payment plan, it's fine. It's only $100, you know, and then, well, those add up quite frequently. And so getting out of debt, we just didn't see any change or movement in that.
So when you first came across pay period budgeting and you decided to try and fill it out, was it challenging to think along the lines of per week? Like, was it a kind of a struggle to set aside what you've tried to set up in the past and set your same numbers up in a very different format?
Yeah, I think so, because I, you know, obviously, like probably most people, our bills are not conducive to like, oh, my one paycheck's going to pay all these bills, right? Like our mortgage, for example, which is now massive, one paycheck is not going to cover that. And so thinking through that and having to split that between pay periods, but like once I've done it, it's amazing. And, you know, our mortgage company allows for like partial payments. And so like I can let that money leave our checking account and it can sit there until I finish paying for the month's bill. And that's been huge. So it was hard, but once I've done it and now I love being able to see across and like know the plan, like out into infinity.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. I know for myself when I switched, so I had several years where I was budgeting not at all by pay period either. When I first made the switch, I would feel this false sense of fear of the future. And it wasn't because we actually weren't able to cover our bills or whatever. It was just because it felt unknown. It was like I couldn't conceptualize that whatever was going to be due in the next several months was actually going to be able to be covered. So especially like annual bills, like things that we pay once a month, we get a lot of fear around like the month that we know that that one big annual bill is due. And I think the thing that we sometimes have to remind ourselves is, well, that's knowable information, right? Like we have all the information available to us. And if we map it out in a tool that allows us to do that, we can actually look in specific terms at the month that's going to include that large bill, even if it's 2 or 3 months away. And I think that really is a big drawback of a lot of other budgeting tools, especially apps, is that you can really only look at your current month, right? Like I used Mint for a while. You can't even look, even if it's the 30th of the month, I can't look at what am I going to do next month until the month actually starts. So I totally agree that personally, for myself and my own finances, being able to like start to feel concerned about something and then be like, hey, you have a tool, you have a way to actually look at what this is going to be in the future can really help with being able to plan around it. And sometimes I didn't need to plan. I could just map out the budget and I could just see, yes, like you can cover that expense. It's not going to be a big deal. And the other thing is, even if it's not going to be easily covered in that individual pay period or month, if we map out a little bit more in advance, we give ourselves options for saving up ahead of time for it or, you know, decreasing a few expenses or something. One thing, in addition to the frequent fresh starts, one thing I like to tell people a lot of times is the more time we give ourselves between when we set the budget up and when we actually have to put it into action, the more options we have for adjusting it if it needs to be adjusted, which is a big deal when you're talking about your money.
And knowing we know what's happening the next week, we know if we're going to go out to eat on Sunday after church or if we have something else planned. And so knowing like, okay, I don't have to set aside $50. I can put that somewhere else. Like just knowing that is great. Another thing too, we used to get into the big rut about is the, like you talked about, not planning ahead for that future, for that expense. We used to heavily rely on, if it wasn't in our checking account, just put it on the credit card. We'll pay it. And we got to the point, which was also kind of part of this frustrating thing in January. I just had our fourth baby. Maternity leave, you don't get paid as much. Did I plan for that? Absolutely not. And we got into the cycle of putting a bunch of things on credit card, and our bill got a lot higher than it's ever been. And it was between every paycheck, I'm putting $500-$800 to back pay this credit card, and then I have no cash on hand. And it was that vicious cycle. And then you add this additional huge thing on top, and it was very, very frustrating.
Yeah. And it can be easy, you know, people who are racking up credit card debt that they're not paying off, they at least know that that's happening, and they know they want to stop that, for example. I think there's a big middle group of people who are putting things on credit cards and paying it off, but the timing of when they're paying it off is still problematic, but it's harder to recognize that that's a problem because, like you said, then you get into this rut of the paychecks that you receive can't be used for your current or upcoming expenses. They're all paying off your past, which just keeps you stuck in this cycle of, so if I do that this paycheck, that means that the exact same thing's going to happen for my next paycheck going off to pay my past. But it can be hard to get out of that cycle. So did you have to then kind of catch yourself up where you got to a point where you were able to pay the credit cards off and have the cash to start paying for current expenses?
Yeah, we did. It took about 8 weeks. The great thing is being a nurse is you can pick up extra shifts, which is amazing and such a blessing. And so I did that pretty consistently, and we paid off about like $3,000 in a 2 month period, which I thought was huge for us. So got that to zero. And now my husband and I are both on the same page. We work with what we have and nothing goes on the credit card. And that's been you're talking 10 years of doing that. 10 years. So that's been huge.
Yeah, that is huge. And just such a weight off your shoulders. You know, even like I said, even if you weren't necessarily ballooning your credit card debt, it was still a stressor or a weight on you of knowing I'm about to get paid, but I can't use that for the future because it has to be used for the past. Releasing yourself from that so that when you get paid and that paycheck goes into your account, you actually get to plan forward and plan for either the current expenses of your current pay period or setting money aside for something in the future. And that's just such a different approach to your money and such a more positive and hopeful approach when you receive money and you get to think about how you want to use it in the future instead of just always feeling like you're catching up.
And then what I really love about the tool too is, for example, like we know in 2 months we're going on a trip. I'm more of a saving sprints, not a sinking funds kind of gal, like I think you talked about. So I know in 6 weeks we're going to go on this trip. So I'm going to go ahead and plan for and save up for the tickets for going to Dollywood. And I'm going to save up for, and we've been able to do that, which in the past it was all just put on the credit card. We'll get to paying it off at one point. And that's been like life changing. Like, and non-stressing because I'm like, I have also a budget for when we go and I have the money to spend and I think I'm going to end up coming under, you know, barring any major things. And it's non-stressing. It's exciting. And we get to go and not be stressed. Like if we want to get food, whatever.
That's amazing. Because I think we like to believe that it is less stressful or less restrictive to be unbound by a budget, to say like, oh, well, if I have to go on a vacation and I have to like budget for ahead of time and stay on a plan, like I'm somehow taking away from the enjoyment of the trip itself. But really, I firmly believe the opposite is true, where now if you can even, you'll get to do this in a couple of weeks, but even visualize and imagine coming home from that trip and there's no credit card bill. Like there is not something that you're going to try to catch up on. Saying it's life-changing feels silly, but it is. It really is, because you're not only not impacting your finances negatively, but I think as parents, when we take that trip and we're trying to create memories for our kids, we almost have this internal dialogue of, I'm going to be really excited for my kids and I'm going to show them that I'm excited to be on vacation. But in the back of your mind, you're thinking, okay, we just swiped the card again. And so that's going to be like a bigger credit card bill. And so I'm hoping that, you know, when we get home, we'll be able to pay this off. And you kind of have this internal struggle that doesn't allow you to be fully present in what you're doing. And so giving yourself the gift of not stressing about it in that way can just make the trip even more memorable and more focused on the joy and memories side of it, as opposed to, oh, I'll deal with the credit card when I get home. So a lot of people can set the tool up and set up their pay schedule and their income and their expenses. Actually putting it into practice can be a lot harder. So once you actually built it out and then you are ready to start that first pay period, what was that first one like? What were some of the things that maybe clicked well for you, but then also some of the things that were a little bit difficult to track or difficult to adjust because it was new?
So I had not been used to going to like an Excel spreadsheet that the budget is on. And so I did a lot of tracking in my phone, like on like a notes page, and then having to go back and put it in. I just felt like it was like, I'm doing extra work. Like that's unnecessary. And so I had to learn how to use my iPad or get the like Excel on my phone. And that has just like changed the game. I think with tracking, you've shown before, it's like 5 to 10 minutes. It's really not that difficult. I think it was just like, I guess I'm not that technologically savvy, like figuring out how to get the Excel and getting it to where it was easy to work on my phone because I'm constantly, you know, have the phone. That was probably the hardest part, but setting it up. And like you talked about before, using realistic numbers, like I'm not going to say that I'm never going to get coffee. I'm also a coffee addict. That's not realistic, but same. I can give myself a realistic budget for it. So just like adjusting my mindset and being okay with like, I have this much spending cash and like, that's a good thing. And like, if I spend it, that's fine. And I have to be okay with it. Not like I need to not spend any of it because I need to use that. No, like this is real life. And if I want to get coffee, I should be able to get coffee. So it was like a mindset change was the hard part. And then the logistics, but that's been great. I actually created it, put it like on a OneDrive. So my husband can use it on his phone, can change things or look at things or add things in the trackers at the bottom. And I can do the same and we can see each other's changes. And that's been really good.
Awesome. So you both edit it. Are you both involved in planning it out ahead of time or is one of you more primary setting it up?
So for the last 10 years, I did all the budgeting, which obviously did not go well. It was very much I knew what was in the account. I knew when bills were coming out going in. He just kind of swiped his card as he went. And he knew if I told him, don't spend any money before Friday, he knew he couldn't spend any money before Friday. And that was really frustrating, honestly. And he's not a huge spender. But he did like to, he likes to stop at the gas station and things. And, you know, one time I tracked his gas station spending just to prove a point and it was over $200 at the gas station. And I think that was eye-opening to him. But right now we meet once a week and we plan it out. We talk about it. We figure things out. And that has been amazing for both of ours. And honestly, I think I spend more now than he does. Like he's like, I don't need to spend more money. I'm good. I'm like, you can when you can.
Yeah. That's really interesting that the ability to kind of see the bigger picture maybe shifted a few things for each of you and I think that's a good thing, right? That a saver would feel more permission to move towards being a little bit spendier. And then a spender would also see some things in the budget that would help them shift more towards being a saver. And I love that you're describing these little meetings that you're having together because I think that is so important for each person to be able to, even if they're not like the primary manager of the budget, right? Like, I don't think it needs to be like the two of us together on this one keyboard are going to type out these numbers, right? Like, we can definitely have a household financial manager, one person who's much more involved or taking the drive, you know, the lead on that. But each person being able to see what those numbers are and have a voice in what they want to do, what those goals are, it makes it so much easier to then move throughout your week. And if you each want to spend, then you remember, oh yeah, well, we talked about that we're, you know, going on this trip and we really want to do this thing. So I'm going to really make sure that I only spend the personal cash that we already agreed to. As opposed to, I think what happens a lot of times is we have one person that's managing the household finances and the other person has almost no involvement, but they still want to buy things. So then they get stuck in this internal, it's almost like a power struggle of, I'm married to you. I don't want to have to tell you what to do, right? Like, I don't want to have to boss you around about your spending. And the other person doesn't want to be bossed around about their spending. So I think finding that balance of, even if one person is primarily managing the money, both feeling like they're heard and like they're seen and that what they enjoy is represented in the budget can make the more like, quote, boring stuff feel more manageable. Like, you know why you're doing it.
Yeah. And I would say I still am the primary person to put things in, but us being on the same page has been life changing. I've tried in the past a couple of years ago. Like, and again, it felt very wrong because it's like I was trying to like control him. Like, oh, I'm going to give you $50 cash and that's all you can spend this week kind of thing. And number one, use this cash anymore. Like, we don't use our debit card. Like, and that was a waste. And then it just felt like I was trying to tell him what to do. And then, you know, we don't really fight, but like that was definitely like a point of contention, right? Like he wants to be able to go and do something. And he's like, oh, Christina's going to see I spent this money. What is she going to say? And now it's like, nope, hands off. You have your spending cash. You spend it to your heart's content. He's gluten-free, dairy-free. And so he likes a certain cookie dough and certain things. And he's like, I'm going to spend my cash on it. I said, go for it. Sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I think too, even like with personal spending cash, one thing I like to do is if we agreed together that like, you know, $40 a pay period is reasonable for coffee shops. If we spend all that and I still want to go out and get coffee, I can use my personal spending cash for that. And on the whole, in the plan, it's not going over budget because there's still a place that it can come out of, which I think is so helpful for anyone who wants to still be able to spend and not feel like they have to ask permission, right? Like when we first implemented personal spending cash, we called it our no questions asked money because it was like, okay, 99% of the budget is stuff that we're both talking about and both agreeing to and wanting to do. But like each of us operate very differently when it comes to money. So we're like, each person gets, I literally think it was like $20 a month because we were college students. But it was like each person gets this no questions asked money where I don't have to be frustrated that he saves his up over a long period of time and then he buys something really expensive. And that felt extravagant to me. But then at the same time, I am the total opposite. And it's just like all these little purchases of, you know, just random treats and drinks and downloading episodes of a TV show that we didn't have cable for and stuff. And he was frustrated by that because he was just like, there's no point to that. So then when we were like, no questions asked money, like you do that and I do this, it just makes it so much better. It makes it easier to agree to the bigger stuff when you each have this little corner of money that you can just kind of go and do without having to be like, oh, Kyle's going to see that transaction.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I love that it was actually not as difficult to track and manage once you built it out. And I think the key to not having it be overwhelming to track is exactly what you said, realistic numbers. That if the numbers are unrealistic, that's what actually makes tracking hard, because then it's like, well, I already spent money that wasn't budgeted. What am I supposed to do? Where is that supposed to go in the budget? If we can actually budget a little bit higher than what we might end up spending, that's so much easier to follow along with and say, hey, there was, you know, $10 extra in the gas category and $5 extra in the restaurants or whatever it was. So being completely honest about what those realistic numbers should actually be when we build it can make the tracking part of it so much easier and not feel like we're super restrictive. So compared to what you had done in the past, were there any categories where part of this transition to the pay period budget was recognizing, hey, what I tried to do was unrealistic, like your groceries or something, like the number I was trying to stick to was not matching what our family needed?
So restaurant was a huge one. And I think that came with having a fourth kid and realizing going out to restaurants is not enjoyable. We always had this like budget of $150 a month, which is hilarious because for all of us to go out to eat one time, it's like $60. Like, so that's just so unrealistic. But now because we're doing it per week, we can look to the week, we can decide Sunday lunch, are we going or not? And then we just make the conscious concerted effort, like we just eat at home. And so our restaurant budget is actually staying about that $200 a month. But before it would be $500 a month because you're talking about the Chick-fil-A runs randomly. Now we make plans. I pack bento box lunches all the time for us to go do things. And so that's been the restaurant and the grocery. I've always been an Aldi fan, Sam's occasionally, but Aldi all the way. But I, like most people in a monthly budget, you start on the month, you're like, oh, that's plenty of money. I'm going to be fine. You get to the middle of the month and you're like, I am almost at my budget. What am I going to do? I have to see all these kids for 2 more weeks. And then you always go over and you're like, what happened? Where did it go in between? And doing it per pay period per week has been, I'm almost always over budgeting and coming under. And then I also, because my income, while it is, you know, I have a basic for how much it's going to be, but it's usually above that because I do extra meetings and things, but I always budget that lower number. So I'm under budgeting my income and over budgeting my spending. And there's usually, that's where we create our little gap. And that's been huge.
Perfect. Yes. Yeah. I always say if you have to guess on income, guess low. If you have to guess on expenses, guess high, because then if you're wrong, it works in your favor, which is so much easier to manage than being wrong and having it not work in your favor. So on groceries, if you shop roughly once a week, it's probably really helpful to have your budget itself be once a week too, because then that's just matching the natural flow of your shopping habits.
Yeah. And I mean, processes drive behavior. And so like the process of knowing, okay, I have this much money every week and I'm just not going to go over it. And Mark says, I love to go in snack heaven, which is very true. I mean, all these little people running around, but knowing like, okay, I can only get 3 snacks this week because we can't go over, we're not going to go over budget for things that are, it's unnecessary, right? So that's been huge.
So those are the little things that we do in the tracking where we're trying to drive down some of our expenses that had been high from January when you started doing this to now. What's the current goal that you're giving focused effort to that as you're driving down those expenses and increasing that income, what are you sending that gap, that difference towards?
So initially it was a credit card, which is paid off. So that's huge. Next thing we contemplated between, because our escrow account increased so drastically, we had that huge increase, do we pour some into our escrow account to get our monthly mortgage lower, or do we pour towards debt? I have the hospital bill for my last daughter's delivery that has about $400 left. So that's our next goal. I know we try not to stretch all the goals out because then it's like you don't feel like you're making any movement. But I think our goals right now is we have 2 trips in May. And so we almost are completely safe for those. That, and then getting that hospital bill paid off, because that'll eliminate about $160 a month bill, which would be huge for us. There are other debts or student loans that feel like much bigger mountains, which we want to tackle, which is funny. For 10 years, we've never felt like we got to get this down. We just thought, well, we'll pay this until we're 80, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the goal, is the hospital bill. And that's like the smallest debt. And then to tackle the next mountain. And honestly, just staying out of credit card debt is like changing everything for us. For
yeah. Sure. And like you said, with the student loans, I think what you're mentioning subtly is a really big indicator that the budget is going well for you, is that in the past, all those 10 years, you basically assumed that there wouldn't be this forward momentum. There wouldn't be the ability, the opportunity to even dream or talk about paying something off that's large. And that's kind of what actually did happen then, right? Like your paychecks continued to just pay for what had already happened instead of making a dent in the student loans that were there, right? And so I love that even just from January to now, as we're recording this in the middle of April, that's such a short amount of time. I mean, that is not very much time. And the things that you're describing are different for you, either just in your mindset or like actually on paper, what you have paid off is worlds different. Like the way you would have felt about your money in December versus the way that you're really positively talking about your money now is quite dramatic in such a small amount of time, which is really exciting to think about the future.
Yeah. The other category that we always overspent was uncategorized. The random things that we would spend on was always insane. And I think that's what I realized in January, looking at the numbers. It's like, our money is going to a bunch of nonsense. Like a Shutterfly book, like an insanely expensive Shutterfly book for what reason? And just like, oh, that looks good, I'll just order that. And it was like, if it was in my account, I'll order it. Like, and it was just frivolous spending. And now to be able to map it out, know like, okay, I've got to get kids clothes in a couple of weeks. I budgeted for that. And just all these things that I would say, like, I didn't know I needed to spend all, but now I do know, is also takes the game. And I'm not just frivolously spending these like high uncategorized, you know, expenses.
The tricky part with that when you don't have a budget is if you let the bank account be the guide of whether or not you can buy something, our bank account actually can't tell us what's available. It can tell us what happens to be there in this little snapshot of time, but it can't tell us how much is going to be available after I pay for all the bills that I need to pay for first. And then the other tricky thing with unplanned miscellaneous spending is that all of the individual transactions tend to be rather small. So we pretty quickly convince ourselves that it's totally inconsequential, right? Like this book for $20 and that shirt for $10, like, oh, it's not possibly going to negatively, you know, we're at a place in our finances where a $10 thing can't possibly be a negative. Well, that's true in isolation. But if we do that too many times, it sure does add up to something that can negatively impact us.
And it was insane the amount of money it felt like we were just throwing away. Like you said, it was the small purchases. It was the 20 here, the 30 there, the, oh, it's fine, we can order that. You know, our Amazon purchases. Like, I guess I blame like being up in the middle of the night with a kid or you know, I was just like the things I would buy. I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, I don't even need that. And it's just totally changed the way we think about our spending and that we actually don't need that. And it's okay.
If you're not paid once a month, why are you budgeting that way? A monthly budget ignores the fact that sometimes your expenses are due before the next paycheck is available. A pay period budget is built around your unique pay schedules so that your money doesn't feel like a mess. Create an accurate, realistic plan for getting the most out of each paycheck. Get started budgeting by pay period today with the best-selling budget template and mini course from me, Debt-Free Mom. It's available for just $9 at debtfreemom.co/template. I spent years feeling frustrated that my money wasn't working the way it should. It wasn't until I discovered the magic of budgeting by pay period rather than by month that my money started to feel stable. Pay Period Budget Academy is my signature budgeting course that helps hundreds of women take control of their home finances. Join today at debtfreemom.co/PBA and use the code podcast at checkout to get 20% off your membership. So you do feel like you have actually bought less, or you've just planned more for where those expenses would go in the budget?
Definitely planned more. We have bought less, you know, because we both have the same goals in mind, which has been huge. My husband has an insane amount of books, and he would just like those small 10, 20 books here and there. And he's like, you know, I actually don't need those. I just wanted them because it sounded like a good idea. So that's helped. But also we plan for them. We plan for a lot, and we do have a buffer for things that come up, a small, small buffer per week. And I don't feel bad if one of the kids, like, or the baby needs another, you know, set of bottles or something because we upgraded. Like, I don't feel bad about that. That's a necessary expense, and I've planned for it. And that's what's like totally changed the game.
Because that buffer is so important, but we also want to keep it at a reasonable amount, because if it's too large, it feels like permission to spend. But I think that's the helpful part of using a buffer that's not like, for me, and everybody's different. For me, if I had a category that was called miscellaneous spending, I would literally try to come up with something to buy. It would be like, what do we want to buy with our miscellaneous spending this pay period? But instead, just having it be that amount left and watching that amount left get smaller every time I add something, that's, even though like functionally it's the same thing as having a miscellaneous category, for some reason, like mentally to me, that's totally different. It gives me just the right amount of pause to decide, do I really want to use my buffer for that or do I not? And so like you said, like, bottles, yep, I'm going to use that for that. Or like my kids bring home a permission slip for a field trip, like $10 to that I didn't know I'd needed to, no problem. But at the same time, like ordering a random thing for myself on Amazon because I saw somebody else wearing it, I probably don't need to use the budget buffer for that.
Yeah, and I really like the trackers at the bottom of the budget because that's been, you know, huge. Like I do grocery, restaurant, gas, and then the unexpected. And that has been great to see that number and be like, okay, I only have this much. And then at the end of that pay period, when we're talking about the next one, be like, wow, we have this much left over. Like, I'm so excited. What are we going to use that for? And that's also been a thing too. It's like, I always thought everybody has like thousands of dollars sitting there, you know, in their debit account for some reason. And I'm like you, if I have that amount, I'm going to find a way to spend it. Like, but no, I have a plan for every dollar we have, and anything extra is going towards a goal, and it is leaving my account when that new paycheck hits, and that's been great. And not afraid to do that either. Like, not
right, right. That's the big thing is, like, if I ever share, like, oh, it's the last day of my pay period, so there's $27 in my checking account, people freak out, and they're like, you can't do that, or I could never do that. And I'm like, I could never do that if I had no plan. Like, if I had no idea what was going on with my money, then that would be a problem. Or I get people say before too, like, if I say there's 27 left in my checking account, like, that's so irresponsible. And I'm like, actually, I have like 5 months worth of expenses in an emergency fund because that's where my money stays. And so, yeah, treating your checking account like a waiting room where it's like the money is sitting in here very, very temporarily until I tell it what to do, either because it's going to go to a bill or because it's going to move out towards a goal, allowing it to sit there for too long. A lot of times people will say that makes me feel better or makes me feel more comfortable. But at the same time, they're usually the same people who are buying things because there's a lot of money in their bank account. And so it's just like this catch 22 of they're overspending because there's a lot in their bank account. But they say that keeping a lot in their bank account is what keeps them comfortable. And so learning, it is difficult the first couple of times when you see that balance go down after you spent so long being like, as long as there's a lot of money in my checking account, I'm okay. Then you have to really tell yourself, usually out loud, like, I'm fine. The money is there. It's just in a different bank account, but it's a new method. It's a new way of doing things. And yeah, like you said, because you have that plan, you have that peace of mind that you've done all the right things that you wanted to do with your bank account or with the money in your bank account. And now you're ready for your next pay period. And I think too, another thing that's great that you said was that when you have extra left over at the end of the pay period, I think people have a false sense of needing to have a rule, like anytime there's extra, it has to go towards a goal. Or if there's going to be money left at the end of the pay period, because our primary goal right now is our emergency fund, then all that money needs to go in the emergency fund. I think it's free game. Like if I get to the end of the pay period, because another way to look at it is, especially for the person who's primary budgeting, it's like giving yourself a little bit of a, like a tiny paycheck, a token for the effort that you've done of like, we did an excellent job. Like we stayed on budget. The money that we wanted to put in savings did go in savings. If we have $20 left over, when the kids go to bed, my husband and I can order a pizza or whatever it is, you know, like we can use those little tokens as tangible reminders of why we're doing what we're doing. And especially when they contribute to keeping us on plan for the overall budget, I'm a huge advocate of that, of like, if there's extra left over and you're like, oh, I've really been eyeing this coffee mug and I've always said that there wasn't anything left over. We stayed on budget with our groceries and with our gas and everything this pay period. Today's the last day of the pay period. It's a $12 mug and I'm going to buy it. That kind of willingness to spend at the same time as also being willing to save is so helpful in being able to persevere for the long term.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's like persevering for the long term. It's like this little, like mini goals that you like, okay, we're doing great. Like we've done this for 4 months now. We've made strides. Like let's get a little reward, nothing crazy, nothing that's going to, you know, make a big dent anything, but to be like, you're doing a good job. Like you can keep going.
Yeah. And it's a tangible reminder to your own mind of the things that we're doing are making a difference. Even if day to day, they don't feel like they're making as much of a difference. It allows you to see that, you know, maybe it's like, oh, when we go out on date night, we always felt like we needed to go to like a Chipotle level place. But, you know, after we stick to this budget for, you know, 3 months, we're going to go to a steakhouse or so, you know, something like that, where it's like you said, it doesn't have to be anything crazy for you to feel like, okay, now I'm seeing the benefits and the upside of what we're sticking with, that you make your hard work worth it, basically. And really, I mean, I mentioned this before, but what I'm so excited about hearing your story is how much has changed in a short period of time and what that means for even just like 1 year from now. Like, where could your family be 1 year from now with this kind of consistency over your past couple of months?
I mean, my husband and I have talked about how we almost are kicking ourselves for the last 10 years, which you can't go back. You can't change anything. You know, we got married very young. We were 22 and 21. We had no idea what we're doing. And no one teaches you. I mean, you're like born with the ability to know how to manage finances. And so, you know, wishing we could go back, knowing we can't, but like you said, momentum, like so excited for what this means for us in the future. And like to see my husband excited is really exciting for me, because I'm like, okay, like we can do this. If you're on board, I know we can do this.
Yeah, that's amazing. And also the great thing about the changes that you're making is that when you're talking about picking up extra shifts or decreasing your restaurant budget or something like that, the cool part about making progress in your goals is that those changes aren't permanent. Like they don't have to be permanent, right? So like we can set goals for saving up for something or for paying something off, but we can also set goals like when the minimum payment on, like, so student loan minimum payments are generally calculated with a lot of little loans inside of that bulk. And then each of them has a minimum payment associated with it. So for example, if your minimum payment would go down by $100, then you could say, well, that means there's $100 extra for other goals. Maybe we'll do 50 added to the restaurant budget and 50 added to a goal, something like that, because it just makes sense that the things we have to do to get out of debt and turn the ship around shouldn't be the things that we also have to do once we have turned the ship around, right? There should actually be a different way that we can live once those changes have happened that we weren't able to do while we were trying to dig ourselves out of where we had been. So I like to have people think like, okay, even 2 to 4 years down the road, could you work one less shift than you are now? Or, you know, like those kind of things. And once we start talking along those lines, I feel like that's where like the magic happens, of people are like, oh, I don't have to keep doing this forever. There's going to be other commodities and not just money that I can start to think about having more of, like my time.
I would say we had a huge gap in our expenses and our income, and that's what saved us over so many years of being, you know, careless with our finances. And then when this escrow increase, our taxes doubled in a year because when we bought our home, the value doubled and our county is very high on taxes and we had no idea. And so our escrow paid it, which means our escrow is in highly in the negative, which means we are back paying for that. Plus we are up paying for what they're calculating for the next year. So we're talking a $500 a month difference in a mortgage, which for a middle-class American is massive. And so Mark and I talking about how when next year, when even if we don't pay any extra into the escrow account and we get caught up next year, when our payment goes back down to a normal, that gap that we're going to have, and we've hopefully been paying off debt and getting this momentum going, that is going to be like, I don't have to work an extra shift every month anymore. Like, because we're going to have so much more to work with and it's going to be great. So I'm just really excited.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, I really, really appreciate that you came on and were willing to talk about this, because sometimes we do episodes where I'm kind of troubleshooting, trying to get December Christina to get on board with doing it. So I love being able to talk to you as the April version of yourself, who's very fresh into doing it, but still has already seen tangible changes, both in the way you feel about your money and what the numbers actually are. So that's just kudos to you and your husband for not only making those shifts, but then sticking with it long enough to actually see change.
Thank you so much too for like what you're doing. I mean, offering the budget tool for free is amazing. And all the things that you're doing, even the little things like talking about your Ally accounts. Like, I didn't even think about high yield savings. My savings been sitting in an account barely getting anything. And so like that was huge. Like, I already saw money in my account, you know, in 3 months. Just so many things you're doing. So I'm just so thankful. I really appreciate it. I love watching your reels, and I feel like I learned something new every the other day. My oldest is 8, and we listened to the podcast in the car, and she's like, are we listening to Debt Free Mom today?
Oh, well, tell her hi from me. Tell her I say hello. And I also, I think you probably are watching it with a lot of understanding too, because it sounds like your kids are almost exactly the same age as mine. So we're like very much in the same stage.
Yeah, yeah. The things you're talking about, Ruby being a clinger, I'm like, oh, that's my son.
We will survive, right? All right. Well, thanks so much, Christina. And I look forward. I would love to do a follow-up like in even, you know, 6 months or something and hear from you how even just another couple months under your belt is even better than it was now.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. And again, thank you so much. It's been great.
Hey, this is Kyle here with Carly, and we are about to do another segment of Fortune Cookie Finance, where we take a look at all of the possibilities of what the future could hold for your money. And I was interested in all of the custom budgets that we do for people. I was interested to see what kind of trends are there. And so I was looking at all of the different pieces of advice that we add on to those, like, those budget plans. Everybody gets 3 goals for their money based on their situation. And so we have a bunch of data for the kinds of goals that we recommend for people. So I don't know if you have those off the top of your head, but I have them pretty fresh. If somebody opened a fortune cookie and it gave them 3 things to do for their money, 3 goals to have to improve their financial situation, what would be on that little fortune cookie slip?
Like, what are the 3 most common that we give for customers?
Yeah.
It's 1, consistently spend less than you make. So when we build the budget, there's often a deficit. More times than not, when we create a budget, the expenses and goals together that people have written down combined are larger than the income they make. And so it's not all the time. A lot of times when the budget shows a deficit, people are like, I'm not spending more than I make. My debt's not growing. I'm not doing that. But they write down these goals that are too large for the income they have combined with the expenses that they have. So it's not that they are actually spending more than they make, but it's that they wrote down, oh, I want to put $500 a month in my emergency fund and $200 a month for vacations and probably $100 a month in gifts. And when we add all that together, it's just like there is not that much space. So 1, consistently spend less than you make is creating a plan where your expenses and savings goals that you have actually fit inside of your income and leave a little bit left.
I want to interrupt you and just give some numbers based on the trends.
Yes. So 57.2% of the budgets that we make have a deficit on their original budget, which means the numbers they sent to us when we map them out according to pay period without changing them are larger than the income that they provided in that worksheet.
And that also means that the first goal that you said that we often give to people, 35, 36% of people we recommend consistently spending less than you make.
It's been edited a couple times, so it's actually even higher
than that. Oh, it is even higher than that, yeah.
More like 46% of people.
All right, so nearly half of the people who come to us for a custom budget, we're recommending you
guys. Makes sense if a little bit over half of the people have a deficit on their original budget.
Totally.
So yeah, that is almost always what we have to recommend first is, like I said, not necessarily that their actual spending exceeds their income, but the lofty ideas they have in their head of what they should be able to do when they're mapped out do not actually make sense on paper. And so what we have to do is say, okay, you know, you have to decide what your priorities are. Do you want to keep those big spending goals that you have or big savings goals? And if so, what expenses do you need to reduce? Or are your expenses pretty well realistic and therefore we need to offset lower savings expectations, basically? So that's almost always what our first goal is, which then leads into the second one, which is almost always save a starter emergency fund. So goal number two is almost always save a starter emergency fund. We calculate what that should be. So we add up what the necessary expenses are for 1 month of spending after we see what your budget looks like. And then we give you a realistic number to say, hey, before you go into paying off debt or trying to replace a car or make a renovation in your home, you really have to have at least 1 month of expenses in an emergency fund. So we do ask, how much do you currently have in your emergency fund and how much do you want to have in there? So then we can give a realistic goal for, okay, you have $3,000 in your emergency fund, but we just added up all your necessary expenses and they add up to $7,000 a month. So we need you to go from $3,000 to $7,000 before then moving on to any other goals. So I would say, did you look at the numbers? What percent of the time do we say that saving a starter emergency fund is goal number two?
I think this is actually a little bit higher than the first one. So if we, again, these categories have been edited a couple of times, so I'm trying to do some mental math here, but it looks like about 50% of the people who we build custom budgets for, we recommend saving a starter emergency fund.
And then if you combine that with the people who are already spending less than they make, it's goal number one. So that's another 10%, which we're not going to do the same goal twice in a row. So these are going to be different people. So over 50% of the time when someone comes to us saying, I'm frustrated with my budget, I feel like I'm living paycheck to paycheck, I should be able to make more progress than I actually am able to make, I'm sick of all the debt I have, well over half the time, their goal number one or two has to be saving a starter emergency fund. Because what we recognize is without that, that frustration is not going to go away. Because you could pay off all of your debt, but if you don't have an emergency fund of some kind, you're still going to feel on the edge of your seat. Because whatever happens in the future that you couldn't predict, which is normal, none of us can predict everything that's going to happen. If you don't have that nest egg that can cover the things you don't yet know, it doesn't matter if you're debt-free, you're still going to be nervous about the future. So that's why almost all, you know, like you said, like I think about 60% of the time, the goal number one or two includes saving a starter emergency fund, which means that the vast majority of people do not have at least 1 month of expenses and savings.
All right. So first goal that we recommend is spend less than you make. Second is save a starter emergency fund of at least 1 month of expenses. And what do you think is the third one?
Pay off high interest debt. So once we establish that you consistently spend less than you make, that you have a starter emergency fund of at least 1 month of expenses, we then look at the list of all of your non-mortgage debts. We take into account how big the total balance is, what the interest rate is, and if there's any promo periods, like you signed up for a 0% interest credit card, but it's ending in 5 months. That's not a 0% interest debt. That's actually a high interest debt because you are 5 months away from flipping to a very high interest rate. So what we do in that goal is say, okay, once we know that you spend less than you make and you have at least a month of expenses in your emergency fund, what we know is that while you're focusing on paying off your high interest debt, if something unexpected happens, you will have to rely on going further into debt in order to take care of it because we've first established that emergency fund. So you would be able to pause paying off your debt, use your emergency fund to pay for that expense, which is the big shift. That's why we do that first, is because goal number three, to pay off your high interest debt, that cleans up what happened in the past, which is a necessary part of improving your finances, but it does not change what you are able to do in the future when an unexpected expense happens. So the emergency fund is much more important than paying off the high interest debt, because it will actually change and expand the options you have when something unexpected happens. So in that goal, we pay them off one at a time. We create a custom list of what we recommend doing in what order. So there's debt avalanche is highest interest rate to lowest. Debt snowball is lowest balance to highest, regardless of interest rate. We kind of do a hybrid of them. We default to listing them in order from smallest balance to largest, but we take into account interest rate. So if I just purely listed your debts smallest balance to largest, and the smallest balance one is a 0% interest medical bill that has $500 left on it, I move that to the very bottom, because we need to take care of those high interest debts first.
So first, I want to share the numbers for that one. Again, a little over 50% of people that we build custom budgets for, their third goal is pay off high interest debt. It's not typically their first goal. And so one of the things that stands out to me is that the order of these things really does matter. Like trying to do all of them at once, all these good things, all these wise money things all at the same time is actually detrimental and keeps you from reaching those goals. So the order of these things does really matter.
Yeah. A lot of times people come to us with the only goal they have their eyes on is paying off their debt. And they're frustrated at the lack of progress they've made. And so what we do is take a step back and say, you're probably not making progress with paying off your debt because you don't first have a consistent, realistic plan for your money that actually lets you know how much is available to put towards your goals. And then second, you do not have that starter emergency fund, which is the actual buffer between you and debt. So people think, again, by paying off their past debt, that they create a situation in which they won't go into future debt. And that's not the case at all. The emergency fund is actually what creates that buffer between them and new debt. So we want them to be debt-free. And a lot of times people see, you know, when we say, save a starter emergency fund first, they think of that as a delay in paying off their debt. Like, oh, well, now I'm going to take even longer to pay off my debt. Saving the starter emergency fund after consistently spending less than you make is actually just step one in paying off debt. So we need to not see it as a delay or a hindrance or something that is not what you want to do. We need to think of it holistically as, if I want to be debt-free, the first thing I do is have a starter emergency fund.
The second thing that I noticed, and just looking at those numbers and even just hearing you talk a little bit more about it, is that those are so common. Like people, if you are experiencing some of these things where you're frustrated by the amount that you're spending versus what you're bringing in, or you don't have an emergency fund, or you have a bunch of high interest debt, you're not alone. Like that,
there are clear patterns.
Yeah. Even just in the people that we work with, you know, we see very clear patterns, and just think about how that would grow to the larger world outside of just debt-free mom, custom budget people. There are so many people out there who are in the same boat of spending more than they make, maybe without even realizing it, that don't have a buffer between them and some kind of emergency or some kind of, you know, unexpected expense that comes up, and who are maybe drowning is not the right word, but, you know, they're under the weight of high interest debt that is keeping them from realizing what they could actually do with their money and the amount of peace and freedom that they could have if they get out from under that.
Yeah. And I like to think of it as, we're not offering you anything profound or anything that you can't Google. What we are offering you is that support to come alongside and be an objective outside perspective. So sometimes the thing that we need in order to actually make progress that doesn't immediately disappear a month later is not necessarily that someone has some insane idea that we've never heard of before. Because anything in life, you should be very cautious of someone saying, I came up with this and no one has ever thought of it before. What we are offering is that we are not emotionally tied to your situation like you are. And that's a good thing. So we can come alongside and say, I know you're overwhelmed. I know you don't want people to know that your finances are in the situation that they are. We can go into problem-solving mode with you, where we have no judgment, we have no reservation about saying hard things in a kind way, so that you can then make that plan for getting out of where you feel stuck. as a fun thing to close it out, some of the data too that we get is what kind of pay schedule people have and what we often offer to them. I absolutely love that well over half of the people, like 57% of the budgets we make, are built on a bi-weekly schedule every other Friday, every other Tuesday. Why I love that is because I made this budget template back in 2016 because we were paid bi-weekly and I was so sick of having budget templates that did not work for what was actually happening in our finances. So the people that tend to sign up for a custom budget are in that same boat of their primary income is paid bi-weekly. We're building a budget that is on a bi-weekly schedule. And the last thing I want to say is that the most common change to the budget in terms of we offer suggestions for what you could remove or reduce and what you could add to your budget. The most common thing we suggest reducing is to reduce your food spending combined with reducing restaurants by increasing groceries. And that's a fun one to do because a lot of times people are really focused on spending less on groceries. So it's fun to be able to say if you reduce your restaurants by a little bit, you could actually add to your grocery budget and still overall be spending less. So that's the thing we most common suggest reducing. And then here's the fun one too. The most common line item that we suggest adding into the budget is personal spending cash. So that's another big thing that people overlook is that they think that they will get ahead in their goals by forcing themselves to not buy anything ever over a long period of time. And one of the most common things that we add into the budget in terms of an expense that they did not say they want to have is that we give every adult in the household personal spending cash as part of the plan in order to drastically increase the likelihood that they'll actually be able to be consistent with it.
Yeah. And whether you spend it on iced coffee, like you are prone to do, or you save it and you go to a concert, you know, once or twice a year, like I am prone to do, that personal spending cash still is an incentive to stick to the budget and to spend money on the things that are important to you that may not be important to your partner.
And like for you, we have a savings account for adding that up, you know, saving it over time. I don't even have one of those because I know I do not need that. It is going to be gone. I don't need a place to put my personal spending cash, but it's still fun for me as the person who runs our budget to, you know, say to you every once in a while, oh, I transferred $50 into your, you know, personal spending cash account. And I know that, you know, even though you're not going to spend it till September, it's still a helpful, like, okay, like the little fun things that we just enjoy doing on our own can still happen while the other stuff is the other, you know, more boring stuff maybe is taking up the bulk of it.
Yeah. Okay. So the three most common things, if you pull out your financial fortune cookie and you read it, the first thing that we'd recommend
if I had to shoot in the dark by what goals someone should have without looking at any of their numbers, it would be consistently spend less than you make, either by reducing your expenses or by making goals that are realistic. Number two is save a starter emergency fund of at least 1 month of necessary expenses. And then number three is to pay off your high interest debt, which, by the way, we consider to be 10% or higher for interest. So if I had to just make a wild guess without knowing anything about anyone, it would be that that's what their three goals should be.
All right. You heard it here. This has been Financial Fortune Cookie with the Debt-Free Mom Podcast, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Debt-Free Mom Podcast. If you want to join me as a guest on the show, go to dfmpodcast.com. The Debt-Free Mom Podcast is hosted by me, Carly Hill, and is produced, edited, and mixed by Kyle Hill. Music for this episode was written by Kyle Hill. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to join in with every new episode as we grow our confidence and contentment in our personal finances.